It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had the chance to chat with legendary songwriter Pooh Bear over Zoom video. Honestly, you probably can't turn the radio on and listen for more than 15 minutes without hearing something that Pooh Bear has written or produced. Pooh Bear was born in Connecticut, but after a tornado left him, his brother, and mom homeless, he moved down to Atlanta, Georgia, and that's where his music career began. He talked to us about writing songs at an early age, having his first major success writing a hit song at 16 years old for the group 112. He talks about going on to work with Usher on the Confessions record, to his long-standing relationship with Justin Bieber. Him and Justin Bieber have been working together for a number of years. He worked on Justin's Journals record, Purpose, all the way up through his new record, Changes. Pooh Bear also talks about working with artists like Dan and Shay, Chris Brown, Jesse and Joy, and a bunch of others. And he also talks about his project, his artist project that he has coming out as well. You can watch our interview with Pooh Bear on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be awesome if you subscribe to our channel. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're an Amazon shopper, a portion of your everyday purchases will help support our podcast with just a few clicks. It's super easy. Please head over to our website, bringingitbackwards.com, and click on Amazon each time you begin your purchases. Those few extra clicks will help keep our mission of providing a platform for both legendary and rising artists to tell their personal stories on how they achieve stardom so that all artists and music enthusiasts have access to meaningful and memorable advice that will help inspire their own musical journeys. To recap, please head over to bringingitbackwards.com and click on Amazon before you make each and every purchase, because a portion of that purchase will add up in a big way to help support our mission. Thank you so much.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Pooh Bear. This podcast is about you, your journey in music, and how you got to where you are now. I know you've had an amazing career, so I'd love to hear all about it. Yeah. We'll get into it, but to have a hit right at 14, I mean, that's crazy. But we'll go to where were you born and raised?
I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, but I was actually raised in Atlanta, Georgia, in College Park, actually.
Okay. How long were you in Connecticut?
From 1 to 8, and then a tornado came, and we had to kind of like start our lives over and move to Atlanta. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Was it just, I can't even imagine how that would be.
Yeah, it was unexpected. It was like at that time was the only tornado, recorded tornado in Connecticut, in the history of Connecticut. So it left me and my mom and my brother homeless for like a year. And then the church that we were going to gave my mom like $4,000, and we were able to use that and move to Atlanta and start over, you know, when I was like nine and a half. So we went through, it was like my dad left, and then like 2 weeks later, the tornado came, and it was like back to back. And then we started over in Atlanta though. So it was, this is crazy because I feel like if that tornado, if that tornado hadn't happened, I'm not sure if I would have been in the music business, you know. But like, we had to go through that tornado in order for me to be displaced and then start over in Atlanta, where the music business was booming in the 90s, you know, kind of still is, but it was like the new Mecca of the South in the 90s, like in 1990 when we moved there. So I'm kind of grateful. It was a bad, you know, the tornado of course was horrible, but I just felt like it was a turning point in my life. And I felt like it was, you know, so much positive came out of that negative moment.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, totally flipping a negative into a positive to be able to be in the, I know, Georgia's huge, Atlanta in the music scene, especially like you said in the 90s.
Yeah, it was growing fast in the 90s. So it was a lot of opportunities, and I just wanted to grow and learn, and that's it, really, just grow and learn and be able to, I just want to take care of my mom. That was it.
prior to moving to Atlanta, were you into music at all, or were you playing music at all?
I wasn't allowed to listen to like secular music just because my dad was a preacher. Okay. My mom was really religious. So I used to sneak and listen to like Stevie Wonder at night, but only like I just called to say I love you. That was the name of the song. And but that was it. I wasn't allowed to listen to anything else. I mean, they didn't even know I was listening to that. Mm-hmm. And so I can't really say that I just didn't listen to a lot of music growing up. It was more Christian, like trumpet music, like Christian music. Mm-hmm. But even then, it wasn't like the normal, you know, gospel Christian. It was like, you know, it was just no soul.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like hymns, you know, choir hymns and stuff.
Sure. So. Okay. So when did you, what was the first instrument you learned how to play?
First instrument was the trumpet that I really learned to play. I dabbled in the piano. I tried the guitar. I gave up. Trumpet was a real instrument, the first instrument that I really spent years and years and years playing. I think it had a lot to do with me listening to trumpet, gospel, trumpet, Christian music too growing up. So
yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you were listening to that already growing
it
up.
It was. And then I look back at it too. It's like when you listen to a trumpet, the trumpet plays the melody. It plays the top line of a song. So mm-hmm. It took me years to really pinpoint it, but a lot of my melodies sounded like trumpet melodies. And I was writing, you know, learning how to play trumpet allowed me to really focus on melodies and not chords. And I think that played a big role in my songwriting.
Okay. You know? How old were you when you started playing trumpet?
I was 12.
12. Okay.
Yeah.
So within 2 years, you already write like a huge hit record.
No, we're not. I wasn't. I think that was a mistake. I was actually 16 years old when I co-wrote anywhere. We could do anywhere, but once 12, I was 16 years old.
Okay, well, 4 years still.
I signed my first record deal when I was 12 also.
Wow.
I was in a group called Young Harmony. I couldn't sing at all, but I was writing the songs. I was producing, engineering. I started that at a really young age. It got ripped off a few times. And then my cousin Bear, Courtney Bear Sills, discovered the groups 112 and Jagged Edge at one talent show at Tri-Cities High School. And I never forget, he moved to New York. You know, they got a deal with Bad Boy. Jagged Edge signed So Def. And I remember 112's first album coming out, and it went platinum. And then my cousin was like, hey, you could make money writing songs. And I was like, how? He was like, I'm going to introduce you to 112. And if you guys have energy with each other, then maybe you could write some stuff. You know, you never know what could happen. So he put me with 112. And the first thing I co-wrote with Duran was Anywhere. And also on that same night, I co-wrote a song for Pink on Don't Take Me Home her first album. And I was 16 years old then. So that was like, that was pretty cool. And I didn't really know what to expect, you know, but that song ended up coming out and being a big hit, being my first hit on the charts. And then it opened my relationship with 112 to where they worked with me. They brought me on tour. I carried their bags, you know, I was like the bad guy, carried all their luggage. And carrying bags, I was writing songs on the tour bus with them and traveling around the world, you know, being an assistant and a bag carrier, excuse me. And it just, that allowed me to be on, you know, to write records like Peaches and Cream and Dance With Me and all these other songs that, you know, I could have never predicted, you know, that I was going to be a part of records like that. Even after Anywhere, I still wasn't really sure what I was doing. Like, I was still learning. It was such like a, not an accidental hit. I was just, you know, it was supposed to happen. I just didn't know what I did or how
right
to accomplish it. So it was like, I kind of was jaded a little bit, because after Peaches and Cream, I started feeling like, oh, if I write a song, it goes to art, like the artist records it and it just goes to the radio and it's a hit. And that's right. how in my mind I was like, oh,
well, that's what you're seeing, right? You're like, okay, I'm gonna write this song, and then this artist is gonna cut it, and then it's gonna make it on the charts.
Yeah, so I got jaded by that. So it took me until I turned like 20 years old is when I realized like, yo, it's really hard to have a hit record. Like I went about 2 years without having a hit. And I was like, oh, wow, this is like devastating. I thought it just made me, it woke me up. And it was like having a hit record is no different than hitting the lottery. You know, it's that like the odds are that slim that, you know, it's like one in a billion. So, you know, it woke me up fast and it made me, and I just started working extra hard and just trying to write as many songs and work with as many artists as possible. Mm-hmm. And that was like 2001. And I ended up going, ended up getting invited to Philadelphia with producers named Dre and Vidal. And they were really cool. And we ended up, that's how I ended up working with Glenn Lewis and Jill Scott and Usher Raymond on Confessions and, yeah. You know, all that, you know, it was like one thing would lead to the next and one uh-huh. song would lead to the next and different artists were, you know, nobody still knew who I was, which was never a big deal for me because I just wanted to be able to buy my mom a house. I never really wanted to be famous or popular or anything. I just know. I wanted to get my mom and my grandma a house and get my mom a car. And that's all I was focused on, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I never really understood the importance of people knowing, you know, I got my publishing, but I didn't understand the importance of like notoriety and credit, like verbal, like spoken credit from artists, you know, just mm-hmm. because I was still able to make money and write songs, but it took me a long time to figure out the importance of people actually knowing that I exist and what mm-hmm. the music industry into the universe. But for so many years, I didn't care. I was like, and you know, and it's not like I really started to care. I just noticed after, you know, working with Justin, who was the first artist to ever mention my name, you know, on an interview, it changed my life again because it's like people, you know, people for all those years, people would just, I got my publishing, but the artist will always act as if they wrote the song.
Right. Of course.
And I didn't have a problem with that because fans need to feel as though they're connecting and relating to the artist, not the songwriter. So I understood that, when the fans feel connected, they purchase the record and then I make the money off publishing. So I was like, cool. You know, nobody has to really know it's me. And then it took me a while to figure out that I could have credit as well. Like I was like, I told artists like, look, you can say that you wrote this song, but just say that we wrote it together, you know? And it took me a long time to get to that place. And Justin Bieber was the first artist to really, I told him, I was like, yo, you don't have to tell anybody. It's just like, you could just act like it's you because I don't want the fans to be confused and not feel like they're relating to you. And he's mm-hmm. like, no, I want the world to know that you did my songs. I want everybody to know who you are. And I was like, it's not necessary. I'm like, you don't have to do that. And he went on the Ryan Seacrest show and that was the first time, you know, Ryan was like, hey, did you work with anybody on this project? And I'm so used to people saying, no, you know, yeah, nah, which is, it wasn't, nah, it's all me. Yeah, yeah.
Right, of course.
But he was like, nah, I worked with Pooh did my whole album with me. And it was like, whoa, this is crazy that it took, you know, from the time of me having my first success and, you know, back in 20, excuse me, in, excuse me, in 1996, from 1996 to 2014, uh-huh. nobody knew, no artist ever said my name.
That's crazy.
But yeah,
like an ego thing. Like if somebody went to an interview, they're not gonna be like, oh, well, I really didn't write this song. This other guy did.
Nah, but it was in my mind. After a while, after I realized the importance of people knowing that I was a part of a song. my thing was just say that we did it together. Like, even if I know I wrote the whole thing, I'm like, it's okay. Just lie and say we did the record. We did it together. Uh-huh. But no artist would ever do that. They just be like, they never would mention my name, you know? It was the irony of it. It took like a Canadian, you know, out of all the black artists, you know, all the hits I wrote for big urban artists and R&B artists, and they all wanted to get that credit. It took a Canadian to like mention me over and over again and put me on the map. Like, Justin Bieber literally put me on the map where nobody knew. People think my songwriting career started in like 2013 with Justin.
Whoa.
So yeah, like,
I got 20 years on that.
20 years, you know, and then also I realized too how my life, a lot of things that I do, not on purpose, I'm just learning and growing as I go. Mm-hmm. But just me not getting credit, I also feel like it allowed my longevity. You know, I feel like people naturally get tired of people over time. Mm-hmm. You know, people get tired just naturally. So I feel like when somebody has a tag at the beginning of a song, you know, I feel like after you hear that tag, you know, if you're blessed, if that artist or producer is enough to have 10 or 15 hits, and it's got this tag at the beginning of it, people are going to get tired of it and they're going to want to naturally just hear somebody else. And I feel like people not knowing that it was me all those years, it allowed me to have like four careers. Like, I'm on my fourth career right now from the 90s, from 96 to 2006, 2006 to 2016, 2016 to 2020, you know, going on 2022. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, I feel like people never had the choice, never had the opportunity to get tired of me or, mm-hmm. you know, and because my style, I've written in so many different genres from, you know,
right. Yeah.
Latin music, country, Jamaican, Japanese, Russian. It really, nobody could really pinpoint on which songs I've done. Like, they could be like, nobody would guess, like, oh, the same guy that did this record did this country record. The same guy that did this Latin
record.
Right,
that's what I'm looking at your discography. I'm like, wait, what? You wrote this song and you wrote 10,000 hours and then you wrote this song for this artist. Like, it's just so, I mean, talk about talent, right?
it's just years and years of me growing, man. I'm still growing and learning and understanding that too. Like, I understand that everything I write is not a hit. And then I also understand that the things that I might feel like aren't a hit sometimes are hits. So, you know, it's like that. And it allows me to grow. And, you know, outside of Justin, you know, now I'm just at a place now where it's like I'm blessed to work with Justin. And we have new music coming out. And, you know, we just came out with a Christmas record with Bryson Tiller. But, you know, I still now have to prove, you know, that I can create hits, you know, on top of what I do with Justin Bieber. And I have done it, you know, I have an issue with completely forgetting, intentionally forgetting all my records that I've written, mm-hmm. in order for me to not go crazy and in order for me to still keep writing new songs and new concepts with new melodies and new wordplay and new styles. And so I feel like a lot of my, you know, just, I just feel like I have new points to prove and new points to prove to myself, but also to the music industry. Cause now they just look at it like, well, you can't have a hit unless it's with Justin Bieber. And it's only, they only feel like that cause they don't know my history. Mm-hmm. And I forget about my history intentionally. So I'm like, I'm right there with them. I'm like, no, you're right. I need to prove that I can have hit records, you know, outside of Justin Bieber. And
show the Confessions record and be like, this thing went diamond. he wasn't even around. Double diamond?
Yeah, 24 million units. In 2020, you know what I mean? 2020s, mm-hmm. I have to make hits, you know, with other Latin artists, you know, I got records coming out with Maluma, Jesse and Joy, Dalex, it's just a lot of stuff I have to prove. And it's lining up for me to be able to prove it with other artists. It's just what happened with Justin is such a blessing, just to be able to have somebody believe in me like that. Like no artist has ever believed in me enough to let me participate in writing 3 albums, you know? And Journals, Purpose, Changes. And these were back to back. It wasn't like, you know, we get Pooh Bear a break and come back 5 years later from now.
Right,
it was like
right.
Journals, you know, which, you know, at the time, you know, didn't sell so well, but we ended up selling a million units after, you know, after time. And it ended up being one of his best albums, to, you know, the people say is one of their favorite albums. Purpose, you know, I didn't think I was going to be on Purpose because Journals was just at that time wasn't successful. So I was like, there's no way he's going to work with me after Journals just didn't do well. Mm-hmm. And he proved me wrong. And Where Are You Now, you know, was the record that brought, you know, that was Justin's comeback record. And that, mm-hmm. And that was, I feel like that was one of the most significant songs of my career, just because so many people in the industry and the general public they canceled Justin back before a real cancel era was, you know, really real. Mm-hmm. They canceled Justin and they said that he wasn't ever going to come back ever again. And I just didn't believe in that. And Where You Now was the song that proved everybody wrong. And, you know, we went on to, you know, with Purpose and What Do You Mean and all these records. And, you know, we look up and, you know, we sold so many records. So it was a blessing that Justin still believed in me after Journals and believed in me enough to allow me to, you know, put together Changes in its entirety, you know, like every song, which is like mind blowing to me, because it's like he could get anybody to write for him. Like, he's Justin Bieber. So it was like the fact that he's like, nah, this is all you. Like, this is me and you were doing this together. It was like, it was just, I don't know. It definitely gave me, I already respected Justin on another level, but it just, he told me he was going to work with me forever. Mm-hmm. Nobody's ever told me that before, but I definitely didn't believe it. You know what I mean? And so, and then, you know, granted on this last, on Justice, I think I only had 3 songs on there, but, you know, in all actuality, it's such a, like, I'm so grateful to have written, you know, 3 albums and, you know, to even be able to say, hey, we're still working on new music that's coming out next year is still like fascinating to me. So not being on Justice the way I was on Changes or Purpose or Journals, it didn't bother me as much as I thought it was, just because I'm just grateful. And as long as people in general stay in a state of graciousness, it's like you can't really get upset. It's just like, yo, I've done so much. I've had so much success. Like, it was amazing, you know, to do what we've done and to not be on Justice as much. It was like, you know what? I felt like, man, it felt weird because I just wasn't used to not working with him, but it made me still be so grateful and appreciative of all we've done. And all the music that we still have to come in the near future.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that says something about the guy. If you know, early on, he write a record with him and he's like, I only want to work with you from here on out, and then follow through on that. And then to be the first person to drop your name in an interview.
I mean,
did that open the floodgates even more so? Like, were people calling you like, oh, you're the guy that writes these huge hits for Justin Bieber? Like,
yeah,
how do I get involved?
It did, because for so many years I've had R&B, I've had success in R&B and urban music. Mm-hmm. So to cross over and have, like, you know, hits like Where You Now won Justin's first Grammy. What Do You Mean was Justin's first number one on the Hot 100. You know what I mean? Like, these were huge milestones that nobody could ever take away from us. And just to be able to cross over and start doing big pop hits, it said a lot. And Justin repping me and saying, you know, giving me credit verbally, vocally, outwardly giving me credit, it allowed all those pop artists that would never, ever think twice about reaching out to me, they all started reaching out. And then this is where I had to be real critical with choosing, you know, not just jumping and working with every artist, because now, because Justin Bieber believed in me, every artist wanted to work with me. And now I had to be smart and say, okay, Justin Bieber just opened up the floodgate. Is it smart for me to work with every artist that now wants to work with me? Absolutely not. And it was just because it took Justin Bieber to believe in me, you know, to get these people's attention. So now it's like, now that I got the industry's attention and the biggest pop star's attention, mm-hmm. I'm not just going to start working with these other pop stars and turn my back on Justin.
Right.
I'm not going to, you know, give a sound to another, you know, male solo artist in the same lane as Justin, like a Shawn Mendes. Shawn Mendes reached out to me. All these artists reached out and they were like, hey, you're my favorite songwriter. I want to work with you. And I had to make executive decisions and say, you know what? I'm not really working with anybody right now, you know? And it's just out of the respect for Justin and his loyalty to me. He was so loyal to me. It was like, there's no way I'm going to go and work with other male solo artists and have success with them and then come back and be able to look my brother in the face with a straight face and not feel a certain way.
Right. So, I mean, if you wrote a huge hit for Shawn Mendes and
then it becomes, you know, competition for Justin.
Yeah.
Bieber.
And then he comes back and goes, hey, why didn't I get that song? Now it's the number one track in the country.
Why wouldn't I hear that? Why didn't you play that song for me first? Right. So my rule, you know, it turned into anything that I write, no matter what, Justin gets first dibs at it, and whether he likes it or not, you know, at least I could, you know, at least he could say, oh, you played me that record. And I didn't, you know, you could look through my history. I never went on to work with any other male solo artists after Justin, because in America, I worked with, you know, J Balvin, which was Latin, you know, mm-hmm. we did, you know, the Despacito with Luis Fonsi. That was included, Justin included. But as far as, you know, me working with another male solo artist that could actually compete or step on Justin's toes, I never did it. And and I'm not sure if he cared or not, but I just know that I wanted to be as loyal to him as he was to me, you know?
Sure. I'm sure he respected the hell out of you for that, or still does, right?
Yeah. But I still, to this day, won't work with any other, you know, they haven't stopped reaching out. It's just, I'm in a constant state of, I'm not working right now. I come up with amazing excuses. Like I'm taking a break. You know what I mean? It's never just like, I can't work with you because I work with Justin. You know what I'm saying? It's never that. It's like, now I'm taking a break. I'm not working. And I just need to, you know, I ran out of concepts. I'm trying to, you know, get my mojo back, all these different excuses. And it's cool. And it just allowed for me still to show that level of loyalty to him that he, he's displayed to me over the last 8 years.
Sure. I'm curious, like, for example, like Dan and Shay, 10,000 hours. Yeah. You helped write that song, correct?
I co-wrote that record. Justin sent me the idea of it, and he was like, hey, can you make this do what you want with this? And the idea was there, and I flipped, you know, melodies. I wrote a new bridge, you know, changed a couple of things, and I just turned it into a record that I knew Justin would love to sing. And I sent it back to him and he cut it immediately, you know?
I didn't know if it was one of those things where you wrote the song with them hey, like Justin Brad for this record.
Dan and Shay, amazing songwriters. They wrote the record. Uh-huh. They sent it to Justin. Sent it to me and was like, yo, make this how you would sing it. Like, make this how you would want, you know what I'm saying? And then he's like, whatever you want to change, whatever you want to rewrite. And so I just went in and I did my thing to it. And Justin loved it and cut it. And I wasn't really sure if it was going to actually come out as a single or anything. I didn't know it was going to be as big of a hit as it was.
It's like one of the biggest songs.
But yeah, one of the biggest. It's definitely their biggest hit, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's the one everyone knows, so, right, from them.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's another thing, man, being blessed, like, enough to to go back. And when I say these songs like Peaches and Cream to different people, nobody knows. I'm like, have you ever heard of Group 112? And they're like, no. And I'm like, you ever heard of song Peaches and Cream? They're like, I love that song. It's my favorite right. song. So I'm like, whoa, it's like such a blessing to be a part of the record that people remember. They out remember it more than the artists. Uh-huh. There's so many songs that people would love these songs. And if you ask them who sings them, they don't know. They don't even know. They just love the record and they can relate to it. They love it. It's the song. So it's like, it's a blessing to be able to be a part of the intellectual property that lasts forever. And, you know, people hum these songs forever. They don't hum the beat. You know, they don't go around humming the music. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and even though we get the least amount of credit and the least amount of respect in the industry, songwriters, we, you know, if you haven't noticed, the Grammys does not have a songwriter of the year. They only have a producer of the year, just so you know that.
That's so weird to me.
Yeah, but yet there would be no producer of the year if the song wasn't a hit.
Right.
Every year you look at these categories, you're like, wait a minute, I don't know these people. And you look at the song, like, I love that song. Mm-hmm. But the awards go to, you know, it's a producer-driven game, you know. So over the years, I had to become a producer, you know, because they don't acknowledge songwriters. They don't respect us. They don't. But our part is the most important part of the whole thing. Like, you can have an artist. You can have music. You can have a tour. You can have award shows. If you don't have a song, there's nothing to be rewarded. There's nothing to sing. There's right. nothing to perform. So, you know, my goal in my journey is to bring more notoriety to the songwriter and bring more credibility to the songwriter. Like, I want to get noticed and recognized as much as the producer does. I think there should be a songwriter of the year category in the Grammys.
I completely agree with that.
You know, I feel like, you know, we should just get more credit, man. And I've been changing the game as a songwriter since, you know, 2001. I was the first songwriter to charge money to write songs. Like, no other writer.
Really?
Nobody. And I thought I got this from Diane Warren. I finally worked with Diane Warren, who is my hero. And I'm like, Diane, I learned how to charge people to write songs because of you. And she's looking at me like, I've never charged a person ever a day in my life to write them a song. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, you did. You charged 112. This is how I knew. And she was like, no. She was like, the producer charged 112. I never charged a song. She's like, I've never charged somebody to write a song. And I'm like, wow. Oh, she's like, wait. She's like, you get paid to write songs? I was like, absolutely. she's like, so I can charge? I was like, yeah, you're Diane Warren. Of course you can charge a songwriter's fee. You're not selling a song. It's just your time. I'm like, look, what if you go in a studio and you write a song? And it's amazing. And you know it's amazing. And the artist loves it. And the label loves it. But when it comes out, the label doesn't support the song. They don't hire the correct radio promotions. They don't do the correct marketing for social media. Mm-hmm. So it's like, now you just gave this song to an artist that everybody loved. You know it was a hit, but the label fumbled the song. Mm-hmm. So now, am I just out of my time and my song? No. That's why I charge. And I'm like, and as a vocal producer, I can write you a song, but you're not going to be able to sing it unless I vocal produce you. It's not going to come out the way I sang it. Like when I record a song and send it, people are like, yo, this is a smash. So back when I was younger and they didn't want to pay me, I was like, cool, go ahead. Just record the song. Take the song and record it. And they always would come back and be like, it doesn't sound the same. I'm like, duh. I need to be there to direct it and right. show the person how to sing it the way I sang it. And in order for it to resonate with you the same way it resonated when I sang it. And that's when the light bulb came on. I was like, oh, you don't want to pay writers, but will you pay a vocal producer fee? I'm like, and they're like, yeah, we could justify that. And that's how I started getting paid as a songwriter. It was like, and then that just turned into vocal producer fee/songwriter fee. And, you know, I was the first to do it. The first mm-hmm. songwriter to ever be like, you know what? Before I think of one word, a melody, I need you to pay me $100,000.
I love that.
And if that song, if you don't love what I came up with, guess what? I have a warranty. I'll write you another one. If we don't genuinely love what I wrote, I'm not the guy, you know, that here, take what you get. I'm Pooh Bear. It's a smash. Like, no. Right. If we don't love it and I feel like I could have did better, I'm going to rewrite you a whole new song. And you already paid me already, so we're just going to swap records now. Mm-hmm. But that warranty allowed people to feel, you know, safe and secure mm-hmm. with paying me, because it's not like you just pay me and you get whatever Pooh Bear wants you to have.
Right, like, and then you're just like, all right, well, that's the song.
Yeah, like, good luck. Sorry. Yeah, good luck. Yeah, that's, right. it. That's what I. That's all I got for you. It's like, no, I'm going to make sure that we love it. And I'm, because it's my name that has to be on it. And I want to genuinely love this. And I want you to genuinely love it, because you got to sing it as an artist. The label, I want you to genuinely love it, because you got to spend the money on it to make sure that the world knows that it exists. Mm-hmm. Or it's just like it goes to the music abyss. Like, nobody, it will come out and nobody will ever know that it was ever a song that came out. So it's like, I figured out how to charge, and it's justifiable, because it's like my time and my energy is valuable. It's like, it's valuable at this point. And now I hope to open the door. I see that now there are other songwriters that they understand, like, hey man, you want me to write this song, but if you don't follow through, I'm just out of my time and energy and melody and songs. And then what? And so now these other songwriters, they're starting to charge a songwriter fee. And I'm proud to say that I was the pioneer. Like, I pioneered that. Like, mm-hmm. they did not respect songwriters. And I'm right. like, and it's just weird, because like, what? It's the most important part of the music business.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's, what's interesting is, like, I love that you said that there should be a Grammy for a songwriter of the year, because if a lot of people that aren't in the music industry probably just assume, like, every song that Lady Gaga sings, she sat in her house and wrote the song and played the piano exactly. on it, or yeah. Katy Perry, or whoever you want to name, any massive pop star, like, they yeah. don't just sit in their house and crank out these hits.
No,
not at the all. Beatles.
Right? No, they're not the Beatles. No. And yeah, so that's the thing, is like, you know, just knowing, and that's the thing, getting credit is one thing. Is like, I'm still on the fence. Like, if an artist, I feel like if it's going to hurt an artist's record sales for him to say my name as a songwriter, I'm still like, look, just say we wrote it, or just say you wrote it. I don't care. Like, I'm going to get my publishing. If people look at the credits, they're going to see my name and they're going to be like, oh, this is Pooh Bear. Anyway, I don't care. I don't have an ego at all, you mm-hmm. know? So there's still times where I feel like, you know, it might not be best that the fans know that I wrote a song, because I want those fans to connect with the artist. I don't want them to always, they're going to connect with me because I understand how to make records and concepts that resonate with the world. Mm-hmm. But I need the fans to connect with the artist in order for us to make money. In order for us to sell records,
get people excited.
Yeah, they have to feel like, oh my God, I feel the same way as you feel. Oh my God, we think the same. We have the same emotions. Like, yes, absolutely. And then if the artist wants to give me credit, that's fine. But I'm going to get my credit no matter what. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Justin was so, you know, such an anomaly to mention my name. I still like to use my theory of letting fans feel like they're connecting to the artist and not just, you know, this guy named Pooh Bear.
Mm-hmm. I like that. So, yeah. I, real quick, you mentioned earlier that you know, there's songs that you wrote and you're like, oh, this isn't going to be a hit, or you didn't think twice about yeah. it. And then it becomes yeah. like a, what, do you have an example of something that a song like
where,
that?
Where Are You Now? I didn't think it was going to be a hit. What Do You Mean?
Definitely. Really?
I wrote What Do You Mean in 20 minutes. And I wrote it because at that time I had already written and recorded 105 songs on Justin Bieber at that time. So when he was like, yo, can you go in and see if you hear anything? I was kind of like frustrated, because I'm like, bro, we got 105 songs and you still want me to do more. So I went in and I wrote it really fast, and thinking like, he's for sure not going to like this song, right? Because I wrote it from a place of, I'm kind of tired of writing songs. You know, at that time I was like.
Right. You're like, I gave you 100 plus to choose from. Now you're going to throw me in there and make me do it again.
More. And I'm like, so I wrote What Do You Mean? And it was like, I'm just going to write this really fast so I don't waste the studio time. And I don't want, you know what I mean? He can't say that I didn't try.
Right. I and sent it becomes to a him. Huge record, right?
I sent it to him. He's like, yo, this is a wave. He said, this is wavy. This is a, he's like, poor, this is a big record. And I'm like, completely not what I expected him to say. Mm-hmm. And I sent it to Scooter Braun, and Scooter was like, this is it. This is the first single. And I was like, what do you mean this is the first single? And he's like, I got that feeling in my stomach, Poober. This is the first single. This is a massive record. And I'm like, no, we have so many other. I'm like, I said, Scooter, we got 105 other songs to choose from. He's like, nah, this is the first single.
And wow. I'm like,
and he was right. And it came out, went to number first, Justin's first number one. We it went 55 times platinum worldwide.
Like, so wrap my head around that.
55 times platinum worldwide. And at that point, I had to sit back and say to myself, I'm not sure if I know when I write a hit song or not anymore. You know what I mean? Like, over the years, I could hear something of like, yo, this is, I love this. This is amazing. Uh-huh. This could be a hit. If the label gets behind it and they really push it and they spend the amount of money that needs to be, this could be a hit. And then, I get to Bieber and I'm like, this is for sure not a good song. And where you now, I felt like it was just an okay song. Like, this is just a very okay song. Where you now was this comeback record and won a Grammy. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. then here comes What Do You Mean? Debuts number one, his first number one, sells 55 million singles. And then I realize, I'm like, all right, I just need to go in the studio and just write songs without having any expectations, because I clearly don't know when I'm writing a hit or not. And, you know, What Do You Mean prove that? Where You Now proved it, but What Do You Mean really sealed the deal that I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I just got to go and write and use my formula and just make sure that I'm just writing and getting the idea out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and whether I think it's good or not, just do it. Mm-hmm. You'll never know.
Because you never know, right? Somebody could find that gem and be like, dude, this is the hit. This is the single. Hit. You're like, wait, what?
I'm like, never, please. Yeah.
Well, you write songs, I mean, obviously for a ton of artists, but you have your own project as well.
Yeah. Yep. I just been working on an album called The Book and the Bill. Nabil is my brother, and he lives in between, you know, France and Geneva. He's a poet. And I just wanted to experiment. You know, my close friend and mentor, Muhammad Adid, sent me a poem that Nabil did. And I was like, yo, these are really great words. I was like, if I could put melodies to these words, this like is a whole new sound, you know? Mm-hmm. And he flew me to Paris and, you know, we cut like eight poems. Like, we turned eight different poems into songs. And I was like, it was so out of the box. I liked it because it for me, it just showed growth. And I'm like, these are words that I would never, ever use. Like, I didn't graduate from high school. So it was like bereft, like words like bereft. Like, I would never think of that word to put into a song. Right. You know what I mean? So it was like working with this poet, I just felt like I was growing, you know? And I love growing. I love growth. I hate feeling like I'm in the same place. So, you know, merging with Nabil, you know, and turning these poems into songs, it was exciting, man, and inspiring. And we ended up doing, you know, lots and lots. And we ended up, we're at about 25 records done right now. So The Book and Nabil is actually a book of poems that I turned into songs. And the first, we put out one song that was dedicated to my mom, The Day You Left. Mm-hmm. And then this next single, Distant Shore, mm-hmm. Which is, we just made it. We're number 15 right now at radio in the dance charts, and it's growing. And we're about to come out with the remix, and it's fun, man. I put these songs out, I put music out as an artist just for fun and just to stay polished and stay on my toes. And, you know, we both believe in this music a lot, me and Nabil, to the point where it's like, yo, let's just put these songs out and whatever happens, happens. And let's just put it out into the universe. So Distant Shore is climbing the charts. It's doing very well. And we have a whole lineup of songs that are coming out.
Amazing. I love the lyric video you guys put together too.
Oh, cool. Thank you, man.
Yeah, it's cool. Just like the space aspect of it. Yeah, it's really rad.
It was cool. Yeah.
I like it a lot. So awesome. So you're going to have a record coming out, a full record.
Yeah. The Book and the Bill.
I love it.
Yeah.
And obviously, and you're working with a bunch of other artists right now, I imagine.
Yeah. Maluma. I just worked on a project called The Avengers with Sech and Jaquiles, and like I'm the only English artist in The Avengers. It's crazy,
That's cool.
And I'm singing in Latin. You know, so it's just a challenge. I just like to challenge myself. Mm-hmm. I get bored. We have our records coming out. You know, with Chris Brown and Maluma and Dalex and Jesse and Joy and the list goes on. Artist named Bri B, that's on my label, Birthday Music Def Jam, that's coming out. Wow. It's just I just kind of always want my hands in everything and keep my hands in everything, man. Just stay growing. I just don't ever want to get complacent. Mm-hmm. Just because I always know that there's other writers out there writing, man, as hard as writing. And as long as I stay ahead of it and my sound is what people are emulating. And, you know, that's another thing. Having the success with Justin Bieber, my melodies and my frequencies penetrated the universe. They've been penetrating the universe consistently for 8 years now. So now when I hear any music, I hear all my melodies. And it doesn't matter which country I go to. I could be in Japan, I could be in Colombia, Brazil, and I'm going to hear it and I'm like, yo, that's me. Like, those are my melodies. But I have to realize that people can't escape the radio. They can't escape what they're influenced by. Mm-hmm. So, you know, me for a while being not mad, but like, it's just, I worked years and years to create these melodies and I didn't grow up listening to music. So I wasn't inspired by anybody other than Stevie Wonder, but my music doesn't sound like Stevie Wonder music. Mm-mm. So it's like, you know, the blessing of me I don't listen to music when I'm in the car. The blessing of me not growing up in a household where there was music playing all the time. I wasn't influenced by Marvin Gaye. I wasn't influenced by these people that I hear producers and writers when they make music, I can hear their influence. So it took me years to create my own sound because it didn't exist before me. Mm-hmm. And I don't pull from anywhere when I'm creating. I don't pull from anything that I would, you know, I pull from myself. And, you know, so to hear my melodies with other people, it kind of made me feel sick to my stomach because it's me. And it's not like a derivative of me. It's not like I got it from the Temptations.
Right.
And now, you know what I mean? It was like, now this came from my heart and my soul. Mm-hmm. So now to hear it in the world and hear other artists and everything I'm hearing, I'm like, yo, those are my melodies verbatim. It took me a minute to learn how to be flattered by it and not. Mm-hmm. frustrated, irritated. Because I had to realize that they weren't stealing it. They were literally influenced. Like they couldn't escape my influence. Mm-hmm. Because if you turn on the radio and you hear Bieber, you go to the clubs, you hear Bieber, you go anywhere, you hear these records. So you look up 6-7 years later, if you're a musician, then the music that you love inspires you and influences you. And if it happened to be songs that I've written, well, there you go. So it took me a while to grasp and accept my influence on the music industry and on, you know, just different artists around the world that now they grew up listening to Bieber. And, you know, and by growing up listening to Bieber, they grew up studying me, mm-hmm. you know? It took me a minute to realize that, oh, they're not stealing my sound. They're literally influenced by my sound and they can't help it, even if they try. And this is the reason why I don't listen to music to this day. I'll go wherever I get in the car. It's just silence. I don't want to hear something and then me go in the studio and write something and I'm writing somebody else's because I was just subliminally you know,
influenced by, right. Yeah. Without even realizing it.
I think I'm creating something amazing and it's already done already. You know what I'm saying? So I just, I just learned to stay away from music, you know, and I can't go. And in order for me to keep writing songs, you know, I write 600 songs a year. So in order for me to keep writing songs, I have to completely forget everything that I've done, unplug from every form of music and create. Mm-hmm. And that way it's the only way I can write new songs and new concepts and new melodies and push myself, you know, to challenge myself to just grow and do different things. You know, it's the only way to do it for me. And that's the only way I could still be working with Justin, you know, because most writers, the average lifespan is 3 years. And it's because they'll get a hit, maybe two hits if they're lucky, and then they celebrate. And then that sound that they had as a hit is gone.
It does.
And now it's not now. And now there's a new hit from somebody else. And now they're the new writer or producer that's popping. Right. And then they have their little run.
Then it goes away. And then it's the next.
And then somebody else come. It's what I've been blessed enough to do. It's never really been done before. You know, Quincy Jones worked with Michael Jackson on Off the Wall and Thriller. Mm-hmm. He wasn't writing songs. He was orchestrating. You know, he was pulling people in. He was pulling Timber, you know, the writer, pulling the writers in, pulling the musicians, and pulling everybody in. I've literally created and written, like, these are, like, from my soul, these records. And three albums, I'm still writing, and Justin's still working with me. It's like, I look at, in the history of music, it's never been done like this.
Right, right.
No, you look at Elvis Presley, had multiple songwriters over the years, different albums. Mm-hmm. Usher, like every artist, Chris Brown, you know, I've written hits for Chris. They go on to the next writer. You know what I'm saying? Usher went on to the next writer. All these artists that I worked with went on to the next, whoever was hot, you know, after the records I did weren't hot anymore. 112 went on and they wanted to prove that they didn't need me. You know, they were like, nah, we don't need you. We're going to show you. And, you know, thank God I was blessed enough to write, you know, their biggest record, Peaches and Cream. And I've been blessed enough to look throughout the history of my career and say, wow, I've been blessed enough to write the biggest song. Every artist I've written for, I've been blessed enough to write their biggest hit.
It's crazy.
It's so crazy.
Amazing. That's amazing.
And so no matter what, they can't ever forget about me. And they always got to think about me.
They do.
And whenever they got to do shows, they got to sing my songs.
I love that.
All of them.
Feel good. That's so cool.
It's amazing, man. It's a blessing. It's just a blessing. And I understand it that, you know, it's not normal, and I never take it for granted. And that's why I'm in the studio every day. Like, you wouldn't think I've written one hit in my life.
But you got to keep going, right? I love that.
I got to keep going.
And I appreciate your time, Pooh Bear. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
I do have one more quick question before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Absolutely. My advice for inspiring artists is to be, you're going to be influenced by whoever you're influenced by. But that artist that you're influenced by, realize that they're already in our universe. They're already out. So if you're making cars, you're not going to make another S-Class Mercedes-Benz because you've been influenced by Mercedes-Benz your entire life. You want to be original. And that my advice is to artists is to make sure that whatever you're doing is original. You know, create, you know, your thing. Create your product. You know, don't, you know, if you got records and they sound like Post Malone, we already got Post Malone. So we don't want another Post Malone. We already got that already. So come up with something that's different, you know what I mean? And make it try hard to be original, and don't be complacent. And be brutally honest. You know, just because you create something doesn't mean it's great. Be honest with yourself and know that the only way you can get better and grow is by being brutally honest with yourself and getting constructive criticism. If you don't get that, you're going to feel like you made it, and you're going to feel like your music is amazing, and it's not. But you have to be honest with yourself. You got to listen to what's going on and not copy it, but be able to play your music and be like, can this song stand next to this song that's on the radio? not does it sound like it, can it stand next to it? Meaning, is it as special, or does it feel like the song is on another level, a lower level? And you have to be honest with yourself about those things in order to really grow and to stick out. And if you don't do that, you're never going to stick out. You're going to get blend. You're going to blend in. You're going to get lost with all the other artists that are copying other artists. So my advice is to be original and be brutally honest with yourself.